It's Meet the Writers on BarnesandNoble.com. I'm Steve Bertrand, talking with Brian Jakes. Brian, welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
You talk about the fact that when you were young, you read what your dad told you to read.
Oh, yeah.
Did you grow up in a reading household?
Not essentially, but, you know, my old man drank as much as he read. And he was a very strict man, you know. Hey, read, that's a good yarn. Uh-huh. You start, okay, you know, I'd read it. But I found a lot of my own books in the local library, my little library on Stanley Road, the Liverpool Corporation Library, which is now sadly defunct.
Is that right?
It was between the Grosvenor Cinema and the Steam Laundry.
When you were going to that library, there wasn't a lot in Liverpool, was there?
No, it was being bombed heavily, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had the Luftwaffe, you know. Yeah, but I remember writing a poem about this for radio and said, outside there may be men on the dole, selling newspapers, carrying coal, but in my mind, I'd like to go to Java, Sumatra, Mandalay, wherever trade winds blow. And I always put music under it. And I found that piece of music from the Brando, Trevor Howard, Mutiny on the Bounty. You know, that mm-hmm. lovely piece by Bronislaw Karper. It goes, la-da-dee. And you can imagine deserted shores with palm trees.
And so here we are talking about two of your loves, right? You started with poetry before writing.
Yeah. I wrote seven books of poetry.
You still write poetry?
I do, yeah. Yeah, but it's in my books and all, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Does poetry give you a different release than writing a novel?
No, poetry...
Just a different sort of exercise.
Poetry is the music of words, isn't it? You know, you can make words flow mm-hmm. like a stream. You can make them sharp like mountain peaks, you know. It's a beautiful... Well, words are beautiful things, but poetry and all, you know, it gives you that flow.
And you love music as well.
Oh, musica viva.
You ever try to write music? Did you ever do that?
Oh, I did, yeah. I did music for several plays, scores, and that. And I used to write music. I'd put some on LPs, you know. I was with my brothers. We had a folk group.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and I used to write, I was a longshoreman, and I used to write about conditions on the docks and make them into songs and poems, you know.
What was the name of that group? I had it written down.
The Liverpool Fishermen.
The Liverpool Fishermen in the 60s.
Wakes Weddens, Bar Mitzvahs and Cayleys.
You've got quite a resume.
Oh, yeah. Been around the block a few times, yeah. Stephen. Yeah.
Well, living with the hare, right, hunting with the hounds?
That's me.
Yeah, you left school at 15.
Yeah, well, you have to. You know, kids now in America say, and you dropped out of school when you were 15, Mr. Jacques, you know.
You know, I have a son who's 9 years old, and I told him I was going to talk to you, and he says, isn't it Jacques?
No, tell him it's Jakes, as in cakes. I'm
absolutely, I know.
Sakes.
And I'm a little disappointed he didn't know the French pronunciation.
Yeah, except when I'm down on the Mexican border, and then it's Jaqueth, which I like very much.
But it's interesting to me that you had all of these jobs, you know, the longshoreman, the folk singer and all that. And it's your work as a milkman, right, when you were introduced to your first real audience.
Driving a big milk truck around prisons and institutions and things like that, you know. And I used to stop at the Royal Waverley School for the Blind, early morning this was, you know. And the little ones would be hanging out the window. Milkman, you know. And I used to throw them little cartons of orange juice up and things like that, you know. And I grew very fond of them. And later on, when I left that job, and I was working for the BBC doing my programme, Jakestown, and I had a little bit of notoriety, shall we say, and a little bit of fame locally. They asked me along to their Christmas party as a radio personality. So I went along, and there were all the gang, and the headmaster and the staff, and I became friends with them, and that's how I came to write Redwall for them kids.
You wrote Redwall as a story to tell them.
Oh, yeah, because I used to read books that were sent in by publishers, you know, to be read to the children. I'll tell you what, Steve, it just depressed me. All the books are about now. Technology, the march of computers and... You know, teenage angst.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we teach kids with the stories we have them read or we tell
That's
them.
That's right, yeah.
And there are two ways to look at that, because right now with a lot of the serious issues, you know, like, well, there's a book about that.
Yeah.
Or there's a book about this. But you're right. The library becomes pretty depressing, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you can put it all into a different context.
with magic.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like if you read Machiavelli, and something that happened in the 16th century is happening today. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can read between the lines, you know. So, well, all I write about, like I say to the kids, is the constant battle between good and evil, and guess what? Good wins.
So Redwall, you read, or, you know, write and read for the kids there.
Yeah.
And then was it secretly sent to a publisher, or how was it that it found its way?
Well, what it was I'd suddenly started on my career. I was a folk singer, and I was doing a bit of radio and this and that and the other. And the Everyman Theatre in Liverpool, there was a lovely man there who was the director of the Everyman Theatre, Alan Durbend. And he was a very literate man himself. He was a Shakespeare translator. And he was also a retired teacher of English, and he was actually Paul McCartney's old school teacher.
Is that right?
And he was always very interested in me, because he was on like a typical little old schoolmaster. He'd always touch his class in the middle. "Do you know, Brian," he'd say, "you're too much of a rough diamond," you know, like this. And he wanted to read everything that I read, because it amazed him that, with my lack of formal education, that I could write. And so everything that, what have you been writing? Give it to me and I'll read it. And I had Redwall, which was 800 handwritten pages in a Safeway supermarket bag, you know, and I happened to drop in to the Everyman Theatre on the way up to the school that day to start reading it. "What is that you have there, Brian?" I met him in there, we were having a coffee. I said, "Oh, it's a story, but it's just for kids. I don't know, give me here and I'll read it." And he did, and he sent it off to his publishers. And he said, "This is the best children's book I've ever read, and you'd be fools not to publish it." And so I was called up to London, which is the metropolis, as you know. And all those lovely ladies in publishers' offices. You ever met any of them?
I have to get, yeah. And I've...
None of them ever have two names.
No.
There's not a Bessie Jones or a Mary Smith in any publisher's office. They all have 10 names each. And them glasses with the cord on.
Is that right? Yeah.
Cynthia Palmer, Priya Tomkinson, Bathroom Matt Aphrodite for 5 Junes.
So Redwall gets picked up, though.
Yeah.
And so you'd published the poetry before, so it wasn't
brand new
to you. But no. Certainly things took off.
Yeah, they really did.
When was there a moment when you said, "Oh, this is what I'm going to do. This is big."
Well, I know I realised it when the book was first published and we had to go up to Newcastle, County Durham. And I was walking through the station there and W.H. Smith's Booksellers was there. And there was a whole shelf of my books and I felt like grabbing all the people in the country. Look, that's mine, yeah. that's my book.
There it is.
Yeah.
Is your audience, the kids react differently here in the United States than they do in England?
In what way? Well, the kids in England are much more reserved. And surprisingly, the kids in England don't read as much as the children in the United States.
Is that right?
I would have thought was not correct, but it is right, you know. Because the kids in England are still not over the hump of being glued to a television set or working things with their two thumbs, you know. But the kids in the United States, they read. They rediscovered the book.
A lot of U.S. parents would be happy to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
But I think kids, I have a couple of middle schoolers.
Yeah.
And I've really been impressed with how kids view writers and authors sort of as rock stars. Mm. I mean, they know about you guys. They know your stories. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, so you find that when you go to schools?
Yeah.
And they liked it. When I brought up with my son that I was going to talk to you, he sat right up in bed. And one of the first things he brought up was, "I like the accents." he said some of the words are challenging, but I like the accents.
The accents are great because I use all the accents that we have in Great Britain, and we have such a variety of them. I mean, I live in Liverpool, and what I'm speaking now is very refined to what I would speak on the street there. Uh-huh. It's called the Scouse accent, and it's very swift and very nasal. And it always goes like this, you know what I mean? Like, you know. And now, not 30 miles going south, staying on the coast, is Wales. And nobody speaks there. They all sing when they talk like that, isn't it? Oh, indeed to goodness. And then if you go the other way north for another 30 miles, you're in deep Lancashire and they all talk like that, you know.
Have you ever written a character with an American accent?
No.
He laughs.
I wouldn't be that bold.
Is that right?
No, the hell I would.
And tell me about your writing. You still writing outside?
Oh, I still write with a pen.
In the corner of the garden, you write outside?
In the corner of the garden, yeah. And except when the weather's too bad, because I have a son who's a builder now, Red Wall Properties, him and my brother. Yeah. And they built me a beautiful extension to the house. And if the weather's too bad, I can sit inside and write and look out the window. And at the bottom of that bush, the lilac bush, there are a little family of hedge mice. My little granddaughter comes in. We call them Pixie and Dixie. Look, Grandad, there's Pixie and Dixie. Bonnie and Clyde. We've named them all different names on these little mice like this. Yeah.
You work very hard. Very hard as a young man, as an older man. Are you able to relax a little bit more now?
Well, the harder I work, the luckier I get. Put it that way. I don't stop working because I came from a Liverpool Irish Catholic working class family down by the docks. Uh-huh. And I still have the work ethic in me. You know what I mean? And I still have that working man's soul. Like, back home, I wouldn't take a taxi. Take a taxi, the money that costs, you know. I give anything to me family, you know. My sons have a villa in Spain and they have a great big house.
Because you walk to the store.
Well, yeah. No, because I won't do it, you know. I go to the sales to buy my shirts, and they go, nice shirt, Dad. And they laugh, you know.
Well, Brian Jakes, it was nice to talk to you.
Ah, it's a pleasure talking to you, Stephen.
I'm Steve Bertrand. This is Meet the Writers on BarnesandNoble.com.